history, a podium finisher on the track at the World Championships and the New York City and Boston Marathons. I knew that she had made her second Olympic team in 2012, barely a year after giving birth to her son, a relatively novel occurrence at the time. I also knew that in recent years, she'd become something of a pariah. In 2015, she and her fellow Olympian husband, Adam Goucher, had publicly accused their former coach, running icon Alberto Salazar, of pushing the limits of anti-doping rules. Karen Adam had been coached by Alberto at the Nike Oregon Project, an elite, secretive, lavishly funded team based out of the headquarters of the world's largest athletics apparel brand. In September 2019, just 2 months before Kara reached out to me, Alberto received a 4-year ban from coaching from the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. Kara, who had provided evidence in the case, wasn't implicated in any wrongdoing, though neither were her teammates Galen Rupp and Mo Farah. Word of the Salazar ban was still fresh, but my reaction when Kara reached out was, this feels like old news. I was born and raised in Eugene, Oregon, Nike's birthplace, and the self-proclaimed track and field capital of the world. Nike runners had godlike status in my home state. For years, on regular visits back, gossip about whether Alberto, Galen, Kara, and other Oregon Project runners were doping was nearly constant, not only on the lips of my sports-obsessed family, but at local coffee shops and bars. Everyone wanted to know if Alberto and his runners only pushed the edges of doping rules or crossed them. More recently, people questioned how Kara's claim could be true, that some people on the tight-knit Oregon Project team could be dirty and others clean. My feeling was that the sport was tarnished and had never been squeaky clean in the first place. One idol after the next had been accused to have been cheating over the years, from Marion Jones to Justin Gatlin to countless Russian track and field athletes. And the motivations were clear. Jones has admitted to taking performance-enhancing drugs. Gatlin, who had tested positive for banned substances twice and was served bans in 2001 and 2006, had denied that he doped until 2017, when he apologized for, quote, any wrongdoings or black eyes I've brought onto the sport, according to Sports Illustrated. If you could take something to become richer, stronger, and more famous, and knew you were unlikely to get caught, would you do it? What if you knew that many of your competitors were doing it already? Factor in that you have a very limited window to earn the income you'll be living off of for a lifetime, and the knowledge that with a single injury, your career could be over. This didn't make doping right, but I felt I understood the very real and potent incentives to cheat. More to the point, I wondered how much the question of who did and didn't cross the lines even mattered. By 2019, my focus had shifted away from covering sports in a traditional sense. I had just released an audio series about Larry Nassar and the institutional failures and cover-ups that had allowed him to abuse young gymnasts for decades. Once I started reporting on serial pedophiles and systemic corruption, I found it hard to care as much about athletes trying to shave a few seconds off their finish times with some shady supplements. I was asking questions about complicity, enablement, and trauma. I was interested in the resilience and bravery of the young women who spoke out, brought their abuser to justice, exposed troubled institutions, and changed the way America thinks and talks about survivorship. So, as I got ready for what I was certain would be a quick call with Kara, expecting to hear about steroids and supplements, testosterone creams, and intravenous infusions, I was already brainstorming a polite response. The Nike Oregon Project story had been well covered. Alberta was banned. Life moved on. Then she started talking, and everything changed. I couldn't type fast enough. Running and doping were a part of the story, but there was so much more. Things that she had never spoken about, except to a few of her closest family members, and to the investigators at the myriad sports and law enforcement agencies pursuing Salazar's case. The dynamics from inside the Nike headquarters were beyond what I had ever imagined. As with the Nassar scandal, Kara's story was about abuse, both subtle and overt, the culture in which it transpired, a chain of command that allowed it to proliferate, and the risks faced by those who spoke out. Kara, the runner who had appeared on billboards and in glossy magazine spreads for nearly a decade, depicted by Nike as the perky Olympian mom from the Midwest, had lived a double life that reminded me of John le Carré thrillers, rife with secrets, lies, and threats. Her story was exactly the sort I was interested in, and that I wanted to help tell. As we kept talking, conversations punctuated by barking dogs, walks to school, caretaking for older relatives, the drumbeats of our respective lives, we established two basic ground rules. One, no questions were off limits. Two, Kara would provide documents, photographs, logbooks, medical records, texts, emails, arbitration transcripts, contracts,